you know, I get so scared, like freaked out when someone asks me to speak. And this has been going on for a long time. But it's like I was having like a meltdown last night, and I had to call Sarah, and I was like, I can't stand that. I have an alcoholic mind that just annihilates me. And, you know, and it happens all the time, and people say, don't you think by now that would leave you? So if you're new, I probably am not giving you any hope, but I'll just say that's what happens to me. And I think, you know, God doesn't remove the fear, but he gives you the courage to walk through it. It's like resentments. Like, I don't know if he removes resentments from me, but he gives me the gift of forgiveness. And I'll tell you about myself. I have a sobriety date. It's July 25th, 1989. I just had 30 years sober. It's crazy. It's like so hard to wrap your mind around. I have a home group. It's been my home group for almost 23 years. It's the Fishtown Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a church basement speaker discussion meeting. I also do a women's big book study on Sunday nights in the same church basement, and that's Women with Purpose. We've been doing that about a year now, me and a sponsee. I have a sponsor, Sarah, and I sponsor other alcoholics, and I believe that's how AA works. I don't think I really understood alcoholism or what I suffered from for a really, really long time. And so my experience is that I didn't even open a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous till I was 8 years sober. So I'm going to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I'll try to stick to that format, but usually I go rogue and like I just end up, I don't even know where. But you know, as a thank you for that, Bob, by the way, it was a really nice way to start a meeting. And in 30 years, I've never seen that happen, so it was pretty cool. New experience, right? So cool. I like to welcome you and your wife, and I think it's Terry. And I don't know. I love AA. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know when that happened, but I know where it happened, and that was in AA. I was presently sitting in AA rooms when I fell in love with AA. So I'll tell you what it was like. So my parents had way too many kids. They did. I have 13 brothers and sisters. I know. I feel like that's all I need to say, and I can walk away. You guys would totally understand, and I'm done. I'm out. And craziness. So I'm number 13 out of 14 kids. I have 45 nieces and nephews. I have a very crazy, fun, loving Irish Catholic family, and that's how I see it today, but I didn't always see it that way. So, you know, I feel like the way I look at it now is completely different than the way I looked at it my whole life. The way I looked at it my whole life was no one paid attention to me, no one cared about me, we ate leftover dinners, I got hand-me-downs, my wardrobe sucked, Christmas was a rip-off, I never got anything I ever wanted, you know, like, I mean, how could you with all them kids? My parents sent us all through Catholic grade school and high school, a lot of money, and I thought, well, if we all went to public, we'd have money, we'd be rich. Like, I had ideas of how we could change things in that house, and I always wished that I was adopted. I just hoped I was adopted and that my real family would come and, you know, pull up in a limousine and they'd be really rich and they'd pick me up and, they'd, you know, yank me out of this gene pool that I did not belong in. And, I had 7 brothers growing up that I felt like they tortured me, and I was a nervous kid. I was like, I had a lot of anxiety and a lot of nervousness, and it's crazy because I think, you know, looking back, I got something stuck in my head, and it grew and grew and grew, and it started to like eat away at me. And that was when I was younger, my mom would say things to me like, why can't you be like your sister Jeannie? Like, Jeannie's really good. And she was. She was class president of her Catholic high school, and she always did the dishes. Like, Jeannie was good, you know? Well, I didn't want to be like Jeannie. And but what happened was when she said that, when she would say it to me a lot, I would internalize that and I would think, I'm not good enough. I'm not valued here. I'm not loved. Nobody cares about me. And that's what grew inside of me. Didn't know it at the time. I didn't understand, but that's what was starting to happen to me. And I felt like I had this like sick, scared feeling inside of me. And when you have 14 kids, the truth is there's no nurturing. Like, you didn't get nurtured. It was like, shut up, sit down, knock it off, do your homework, get to bed. Like, you know what I mean? Like, come on, you know how stressed out they were? Like, when I really think about what it was really like to grow up in that crazy house, you know? I mean, Shay's got 2 kids. Could you imagine? Like, that, add 11 more kids, and that's so insane. Like, why? Why would you do that? So, but it affected me deeply. Like, it did. Like, I was really sensitive, and I didn't know it. And I was terrified. I felt like I was afraid my whole life. I just didn't feel safe, and I felt like no one protected me, no one cared about me, and all this crap that just kept growing and growing and growing in my head. And, you know, I barely made it out of school. My grades sucked. I did enough to get by my whole life. Did enough to get by. And I guess I picked up a drink when I was 12 years old. And the big book says that alcohol is drink for the effect that alcohol produces, that sense of ease and comfort that comes at once by taking that first drink. And the effect it had on me was I got relief. I got relief. Like, and I didn't know what I needed relief from, and it was my thinking. It was just constantly annihilating me, and it was constantly badgering me and putting me down. And it's almost like I didn't even really recognize that my thinking just was a constant, like, negative train of just, you know, madness. And I didn't know that I actually, somewhere along the line, started to believe everything that my mind told me. So, you know, I had a lot of self-hatred. I was really self-conscious, and I was terrified. And when I took a drink, I felt relief. I guess I didn't think so much about myself. I didn't listen to my head so much. And so, you know, like, AA, people talk about that being their solution, because it gave me relief. I finally felt okay. Like, it was actually painful for me to be sober, to be in sober skin. I couldn't take it. And that relieved that. Thank God. Like, people say, thank God for booze. It kept me from killing myself. I would have killed myself had I not found a drink, because I just couldn't take another minute of being me. And I picked up a drink, and I don't know. I didn't know anything about alcoholism. I didn't know what a spiritual malady was, and I didn't know what I suffered from. I didn't know that I would not be able to put it down. And if you asked me, I would say, I can quit drinking anytime I want. I just don't want to. I got in the restaurant business really young, and it seems like everyone in that business was drinking, drinking, drinking. That's what we did. We drank. You get done work in a restaurant, and they give you an after shift drink. It's like a bonus. We don't get like health benefits or anything, but you get an after shift drink. It's a great thing. And I really looked forward to that drink, but the funny part is, like, I drank the whole time I was working. when you're at a restaurant, like a lot of times, like you can freely drink because your bartender's hooking you up or whatever. And I took full advantage of that. But what would happen was this illness was starting to progress. And now I can't show up for work. I'm maybe showing up a couple days a week. And when I showed up, I'm still in the uniform that I had on the day before. I'm dirty. I'm unkept. I haven't washed my face. The only reason why I'm showing up for work is because I need money to drink some more. And it was just like this, like, just downward spiral. But I can't even recognize that that's what's going on with me. Because the lower I got, the lower, the people I hung with were. And not making fun of them, but it just seemed like I started to change friends, and I started to be attracted to people that drank like me and that see no problems with the way I was drinking. You know, we, like in a restaurant, you get done work, sometimes it's like midnight and you end up like at some crazy bar, and then you're at an after hours club, and it's just like this vicious circle. You wake up at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you jump in the shower, you gotta be in work at 4 o'clock, you gotta go to work because you need money to drink some more, and it's just craziness. And I made a lot of money. And I remember my mom saying, like, why don't you ever have money? Like, you work all the time, what's your problem? And I never bought myself a new shirt. Like, I never, you know what I mean? Like, I drank, and that's what money went to, and I couldn't stop it. I couldn't help it. Just like every time, looking back, like every time I picked up a drink, I hurt someone I loved. I didn't mean to. I didn't want to, but I couldn't stop it. And like before I know it, like this is progressively getting worse. And now I'm starting to steal from work. I'm starting to steal from my family. I'm lying all the time. So every time I pick up a drink, it's starting to chip away at my character, chip away at my character. And before you know it, when I finally was forced to get help through this, my family, I remember my sister like screaming at me saying, you're like a junkie, a thief, a loser, a liar. And all these things were true, but it wasn't how it started out. So it just kept getting worse and worse, and it was chipping away at me and chipping away at me. And that's how I ended up. And that was the truth at the end. I was a liar. I was a thief. I couldn't stop drinking. I didn't know what was wrong with me. And my family had one of those things you see on TV where they're like, we really love you and we want to get you help. And it wasn't like that. They were like, you're a piece of crap. You stole mama's jewelry. We're pressing charges. You know, you're going to jail. Like, oh, come on. Honest to God, they had like a counselor lady there who had a chain hickey on her neck. It was so insane. I look back and true story. And but like this big sister that I had that, you know, was really calling me out. She was the one who was always bailing me out of stuff, always helping me. And I remember like when it was getting real dark, my drinking was really dark. I was starting to isolate. Like now I'm like, I can't go out of the house. I'm really paranoid, getting super weird. She was always one to like help me out of a jam. And she came to my parents' house one night and said, like, you know, pack a bag, you're going to move in with me. And I said, what do you mean? She's like, you either pack a bag now or we're going to downstairs and tell mom and dad you got a serious problem. So I threw some stuff in a bag and we got in the car and picked up an ounce of pot on the way, and we went to Fishtown. And if you've never been to Fishtown in the city, which is where I live, it's like there's people that sit out on beach chairs out front of their house, and these are the parents, and they have coolers next to them of, you know, Schmidt's beer and whatever they drank. And I was like, all right, it was like Wildwood, I could do this. And she moved me down there, and within 3 months I was so terrified and so weird from my drinking that I couldn't leave the house. Like I would only go out at nighttime. It was so bizarre. Lost that job. And I say I lost the job because my boss was in AA, but that's how I lost the job. I torture him. He's still in AA. I still see him. One time I tried to make amends to him, and he's like, you know, Claire, you were such a good employee when you would show up, but you would never, I couldn't get you to show up. Mondays were out and Fridays were out. You know what I mean? Like, great employee. So crazy. And he was, like, making amends for firing me. So I was such a pain in the ass when I drank. I had such an attitude. Everything sucked. My life sucked, you know. Just like, I just hated life. I hated myself. And I didn't know that I was so deeply unhappy. And so my sister, because I got fired from the restaurant, she was going to help me and give me a job. And she gave me a job as a hot dog vendor. And I don't know if you've ever been in a hot dog cart, but it's a good 120 degrees in there. And it's a metal box. It's got an oven, a fryer, a coffee urn. It's awful. And I was detoxing. So I would lay on the soda bin. I was shaking so bad. And it was so nuts. Like, man, this is a job she gave me, and she had a plan. She was like, I'm going to take your money when you get paid on Friday, and I'm going to give mom and dad money, anybody you owe money to. And at this point, like, I can't manage my life. And she offered to do it for me. So I said, go ahead. And she did. Like, that was her plan. And, she put me in this hot dog cart. I'm detoxing. I'm really mean to her customers. Can't get any worse than this. And once in a while, like, her and my brother-in-law would leave to go run an errand, and I would take off. I'd leave that hot dog cart because I couldn't stand being sober another minute, and I'd have to go get a drink. And I'd come back, and they would be like, where were you? You know, I was always in trouble. I was always getting caught. And I was like, I went to the band. I needed to take a walk. I had all these excuses. They're like, you're such a liar. And at this point, like, I'm embezzling money out of this hot dog cart, and they were on to me, and they set me up, and I got caught, and it's just so nuts. So this is how I really got to AA, is my family then scooped me up and had this, like, intervention thing. And I just remember my sister. I drank with my sister for years. And they were, like, bewildered by my behavior. They were baffled by, like, what is up with you? You're missing for days. Nobody knows where you're at. You're dirty. You look a mess. You steal our car. Like, rah. They had, like, a history of all the things that I ever did to them, you know? They had this counselor lady there, and she's like, you know, I think your sister should go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And my sister was like, really, lady? You know, she was like, well, she's like, I think she's got a drug problem. And we're all screaming at each other, and I'm just sitting there. And she's like, well, when she picks up a drink, you know, she ends up, like, in North Philly and, like, in the bad neighborhoods and all this stuff. And they're talking about me as if I'm not there, like I can hear you. It was so nuts. And I remember my sister, like, all right, so are you telling me my sister can never drink again? Is that the deal here? And she's like, yeah, I don't think it's a good idea that she drinks again. And basically she was talking about what Dr. Silkworth says, that I can't use alcohol safely in any form. And she was trying to convince me of this. And, I mean, my own experience, I knew, but I did not want to, you know, get sober. And that's what they were discussing around this table. And she was like, so if my cousin gets married, she can't drink at the wedding? And the lady's like, is your cousin getting married? She's like, it's hypothetical, lady. It was such a scene. Like, but I remember thinking, oh, my God, like, I'm not going to be able to drink again. I'm not going to be able to drink again. I'm too young to get sober. There's drinks I haven't tasted yet. What is getting sober? I don't even want to be sober. That sounds terrible. Who wants to be sober? Like, oh, my gosh. But I remember my sister turning to me and saying, like, are you that far gone? Like, are you really that far gone that you can never drink again? And I knew deep inside of me, like they say, you know, like we can see to our innermost self, I knew that I couldn't drink again. But I didn't want to, like, say it out loud, because then I'd have to do something about it. And she, you know, this is how this went down. And, you know, they pretty much threw me into a rehab. I was in rehab, and then from there I went to AA and NA and CA and OA. I don't even know. It's just, you know, adult children of alcoholics. My parents never drank. I was just going anywhere. Like, I was bouncing off the walls. So when I say I did not experience the 12 steps or open in a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous for 8 years, I can tell you that I experienced alcoholism like you can never, ever imagine. Completely sober, out of my mind, and running around AA going, I'm in AA, I'm doing AA, and I was unraveling. I felt like I was losing my mind. I used to chain smoke. We were allowed to smoke in the meetings, and I'd pace back and forth in the back of the room. I got sober in 2 clubhouses in Philly. One was kind of like a biker clubhouse, but no one owned a bike. Seriously, everybody in there had chains, tattoos, beating each other up, no teeth, and these were the women. I was like, oh, man. Shoot, how did I get to AA? I swear to God, it was so nuts. And the other, like, you could buy a leather coat at the back of the room in the middle of July. I've never been to AA. I didn't even know what AA was. I thought you watched movies here. Like, I was so clueless. And I get to this clubhouse, and it's like a lot of madness. They had dances, which was fun. You know, I'm young. I'm like, oh, yeah. Like, I was so nuts. But honestly, I had this sneaky thought in the back of my mind that, like, when everyone leaves me alone, I can drink again. When everyone leaves me alone. Because I wasn't done. Like, I felt like I'm too young. I mean, come on. What am I going to do? Go bowling the rest of my life? This is awful. Like, please, sentence to AA. I can't do it. And, but I didn't know that in spite of what my thinking was telling me, in spite of the resistance I had, in spite of the judgments I had in AA, that God would keep me sober anyhow. And I haven't had a drink since my first AA meeting. And that's all the grace of God. For someone who didn't want to be sober, and God kept them sober anyhow. What started to happen to me was I was sitting in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous in these 2 crazy clubhouses, and I started to hear the message of AA. I started to hear what happened to people when they would say things like, I picked up a drink, and I haven't been back in 11 years. I was going out for one drink, and I haven't made it back in 5 years. I've lost everything. My wife, my kids, my house, my job. Like, I was really starting to see the power of alcohol, and I was really hearing the message in AA. And still so untreated in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know that I wasn't doing anything right or wrong. I was just following direction from 500 different people. Like, you know, I swear to God, she's laughing because it's true. This is how we treated alcoholism. When I would go to this clubhouse and I was really, like, you know, unraveling and freaking out, and they would say, how many meetings you making, Claire? You know, like, how many commitments you have? Make another meeting. If this ain't working, make another meeting. So we were going to like 2-3 meetings a day. We were sitting in diners, you know, like around the clock, making meetings, you know, picking up people, like commitments and all that. But I had never opened a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous because I thought the book was too big, and I thought that that's a Dave line. But I thought that it was like for people trying to get sober. And I was already sober, so I didn't really need to do that. But if you're a real alcoholic, that like hole in the soul alcoholic that suffers from a spiritual malady and you don't take the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, what happens is, like me, you start getting sicker and sicker sober. And I started to experience, like, really lows in AA and bad depressions, a lot of self-hatred. I was going through the emotional ringer nonstop. I didn't know why I was unraveling because I was sober and I was in AA and I made 100 meetings a week and I didn't know what was wrong with me. And, you know, no clue. And I didn't know that the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous had a design for a living that was outlined in that book, that if I followed it, honestly, I would be free. And I would connect with a higher power. Like, I mean, I honestly didn't know any of this. And people think, how is that even possible? And it wasn't that people weren't talking about it. They probably were. I just couldn't hear it. When I was a couple years sober, my little brother and this guy, Chris B., got sober in Northeast Philly, and they started the first big book study that I had ever heard of, and it was early 90s. And we tortured them. So when they walked in the clubhouse, these two clowns with a big book, no one carried a big book. No one walked into AA rooms with a big book. It was like almost unheard of. It was like, look at these two. And we tortured them, and they would walk in the room and we'd be like, here goes Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob. You know, yeah, isn't that great? And but what I really noticed was that they were happy. And I never really seen people that happy and free. And they didn't care that we were making fun of them. You know what I mean? They were just like doing their thing. They were taking people through that book. But at this point, I'm 5 years sober, and now I'm hiding behind my time, and my ego won't let me tell them that I need help here. I'm dying in AA, and I can't tell them because I don't want anyone to know. And that's like a really rough place to be in AA, to not be able to tell the truth about yourself and afraid of what people think of you so much that you're afraid to ask for help. In Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm afraid to ask for help. And I think that's the whole point of Alcoholics Anonymous. But, like, I don't want anyone to know that I'm not free. And I still have this real sick feeling in my stomach every day. And I got a head that's just, like, completely just eating me alive. And you know, I had a few solutions besides, you know, sitting in the room of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my first solution's name was Danny. And I met him in AA. And, yeah. So I was about 6 months sober. And within 2 weeks, we love each other and we're moving in. And that stuff works for a minute until he robs you. And he takes your VCR and your gold chains. And he relapses, and I say, maybe you should move, you know, back in the recovery house I drug you out of. And he did, and 3 weeks later married my best friend. So at a year sober, I found, yeah, good times. I found out what a resentment was. It was so brutal that I thought there would not be 1 second of any day that I would not wake up and think about them and plot their death and just, oh, my God, I was really unraveling, losing this. And the reason why I'm telling you that story is because I prayed. People told me, go to page 552, and I did that. And I prayed for them for 2 weeks because that's what the book told me to do. And really, that's just one woman's experience. But I was listening to what people were telling me to do, and I expected after 2 weeks I would not think another thought about them, and that's not how it happened. But I prayed because I was in so much pain, and I wanted to be free. And I continued to pray, and I continued to pray, and I was twisted in AA. And the truth is, I don't know when that left me. Because I had nothing to do with it. But about 20 years sober, I'm sitting in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the girl that I do the big book study with, I've been sponsoring her for 22 years, and she's speaking up in the front of the room, and she always says, Claire's my sponsor. And I don't know why, but she does. And this girl happened to be in this meeting. And she came to me after the meeting. She said, I cannot believe you're still sober. And I said, me either. And she said, would you help me? And see, people would say things like, you may be the only example of a big book anybody will ever meet. You know, people may not know what principles are, but if you keep practicing them, somebody's going to be attracted to that. And she asked me to help her, and I said, absolutely. And I got to sponsor that lady. No, I don't really have the capacity for that kind of forgiveness, but I have a loving God that helped me forgive her long before she asked me for help. So when she asked me for help, I was like, absolutely, and I meant it. I also got another solution a year later. His name was Michael, and same thing, 2 weeks. We love each other. We're moving in. My sponsor's like, are you kidding me? And what did she know? And I was a pain in the ass sober. I was like, you're gay. Your girlfriend's not even cute. Like, I just, Oh my God. I don't even know how anybody put up with me or how God kept me sober. I was so nuts. And so, oh man, I'm so sorry. Cause, and please trust me, I'm not trying to offend anybody, but that's how my thinking was. Like, I just feel like when I look back, I was so sick in AA and I didn't know I was dying from alcoholism. It's crazy. I'm getting worse and worse, and my attitude's getting worse and worse, and the fear's getting greater and greater. And I moved this guy in, and I lived with this guy. I don't even know how long. I was about a year, I guess. And after 6 months, he picked up, and he couldn't get sober. And I really started to witness the power of alcohol, that somebody that just could not put it down. And what I learned from that is every time he came to AA, he said he didn't feel welcomed. And he felt like he was judged here. And I think the lesson is that no matter how many times you see people go in and out of AA, that they can't help it. They don't want to be like that. And our job here is to put our hands out and to be kind to them. And, I mean, he was always trying to kill himself, you know. Like, I swear to God, my life was crazier sober than it ever was drinking. And I got to the point where I was afraid to tell the truth about how I was living sober. And that's a really dangerous place to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, just madness. It was madness. And I came home from work one night and found Michael dead on my living room floor. And, I would like to say my first thought was like, oh my God, poor Michael. But it wasn't. I was like, what am I going to tell everyone? I was so selfed up and I didn't know it. And what everyone's going to think of me. What's everyone going to say? Just crazy looking back. And God kept me sober anyhow. Like that's the truth. And if I would say that I've done anything since I got to Alcoholics Anonymous consistently is that I prayed. I prayed, and maybe my prayers were crazy prayers, and you know, but I prayed all the time. And I want it to be different. And like Sarah says, I just can't be different. And I continue to seek God. And about 8 years sober, when I couldn't take the pain anymore, was when I finally opened a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I would like to say that that's what happened, and I got free, and all is well, and that's not what happened. I did get a little free, and I got motivated, and I was running around AA, and I was sponsoring people, and I thought, this is it. This is the magic here. You know what I mean? Out of self and into others, helping others, helping others, helping others. And I started kind of like hiding behind that. But I wasn't telling people that I still had that sick feeling inside of me, that I still had a head that was just torturing me. Because, like, that will, like, kind of take you out of yourself, right? It'll just, you know, constantly divert you from what's going on, that internal condition that is so unbearable that this is why I drank. When I came to AA, old-timers would say to me, you know what, kid, you should talk about what alcohol did to you. And the truth is, what alcohol did to me, I'll forget. I will never remember. But what it did for me is why I could drink again. And so about... 12 years sober, I'm really starting to unravel again. I have sponsees. I'm general chair of my home group. I'm in service. What's wrong? Why do I feel like this? What's going on here? And about 15 years sober, my sister and I had this big, great idea to open a restaurant. We said, oh yeah, maybe we should do this. Like, it's a project, right? It's going to be great. And I never asked God, and I went completely self-will and opened this restaurant with my sister. And within 2 years, she doesn't want to talk to me. My sister-in-law can't stand me. Nobody wants to look at me. I'm unbearable to be around. My ego is so blown out. I'm full of fear, financial insecurity, and I am like a mess. And at this point, whatever my sponsor's saying, I can't even hear another word she's saying. It's not what she's saying. I'm just so full of myself that I can't, and so full of fear, I can't hear her. And my business partners, my sister and sister-in-law, say they don't want to be in business with me anymore. And I'm thinking, really? Because I put up the most money. And the reason why I put up money is because I remortgaged my house. Completely unimaginable, out of my mind. And so, like, you know, just all ego. No God in any of these decisions that I'm making. And I write, of course, because I got resentments galore, I write this inventory. And I realize, like, I don't know if I could take this to my sponsor. Because I can't hear her anymore. And I got on my knees, another surrender in AA, and I say, God, please. When I got to AA, people say, get a sponsor that you want what they have. Like, you know, like their outside stuff. You want what they have. Like if they want to have a nice car and all this stuff, like that's so insane. But that's what I heard. Maybe that's not what they said, but that's what I heard. And at this point in my sobriety, I said to God, I don't know what my sponsor looks like. And I don't know who's supposed to sponsor me, but I really need some help here because I'm dying. And I prayed. And every time I would walk in a meeting, I would see Shay and Dave and like this whole crew of people with a lot less time than me that looked really happy. Like they were so much fun, right? And like my head, like I remember one time Shay saying, why don't you ask Dave? I was like, really? So now I'm 18 and a half years sober, and I went to this guy who had 3.5 years sober, and I said, would you help me? Because I'm really struggling here. And this is, like, what I'm saying is, like, at this point, I'm not hiding behind my time anymore. It don't matter how much time I have. I'm dying. And he said, I don't know if I can help you because you have a lot of time, and you know the big book and all this stuff, which I never really believe anyhow. But he said, let me think about this. And he said, why don't we say the set-aside prayer? Do you know what that is? I said, no. He said, did you ever hear the set-aside prayer? And I said, yes. And he said, well, let's say it. I go, I just lied. He goes, oh, this is going to be awesome. And yeah, so he's like, this is going to be great. So Dave sponsored me for 11 years. And what I realized is by saying that set-aside prayer, like, I was open to have a new experience, and I was relying on all this old experience in AA. Like, I got a home group, I got sponsees, they're sponsoring me, all this stuff that just, like, it just wasn't working anymore. And I'm hiding behind my time and all that crap that the egos tell me. And I started to really have, like, a whole new experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, a lot of fun. And I said, I think I should get one of them spiritual directors. You know, Dave, like 20 years sober, people get one of those. He's like, yeah, go ahead. And so that's what I did. I started to see this nun. And like a year later, I said to her, I ever tell you I own a restaurant? She's like, what? No. You've never mentioned that. And I'm like, yeah, well, I can't sleep at night. You know, I'm so full of fear. Like, I just so nuts. I said, I just wish God would send me a big sign. Like, you know, like he would send me money or tell me to keep the doors open. She's like, go in the chapel right now. Shut your mouth and go talk to God the way you're telling me. As you are, go to God. And I did. And I said, I'm out of money, out of ideas. And I just need a sign. And I'm walking out of the chapel, and I said, I want a big sign. I don't want this fake little, here's a reservation for 4 people, because I'm delusional. I think God wants me to keep this restaurant open. And I leave this chapel, and 4 hours later, I got a phone call that I was anonymously nominated for this television show that helps restaurants that are in trouble. And I thought, holy crap, man. I got goosebumps, and I thought, wow, God, you're really listening to me. I never even knew he listened to you. Like, 4 hours later, that was probably like I had a cell phone number. Like, it was incredible. And honestly, that's, like, I thought that was a pretty big sign. So, yeah, I was on a reality TV show. Uh-huh. I was season premiere, Kitchen Nightmares, and it was the craziest thing. Like, it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. But what I realized is that that this guy was personal, that he was listening to me. And the hardest part for me was to hear God. Stop telling God how to be God. Stop telling help how to help me. And when I went to Dave, like, I just kind of put that aside and just said, dude, I need your help. And when I went to this nun, and she was like, you just go talk to God. Don't put conditions on it. Just go talk to God. And it was like the first time I realized, like, out of all these years, the hardest thing for me to do was get out of my own way. I could never get out of my own way. Man, talk about, like, stuff will run right. I was always telling God what to do, what I needed to feel better. Because that's the whole goal here, right? I want to feel better. Dave's like, are you kidding me? Do you want to feel better or do you want to get better? I'm like, what's the difference? He's like, well, we can get you to feel better, get a boyfriend, a car, something. You know, but are you willing to do the work to get better? And, like, I was like, you know. But he would say things like this to me. And he would say, like, he would give me direction. I'd go, I don't want to do that. And he would go, okay, well, don't do it. Ain't going to affect my life, but it'll affect yours. You want to take the direction right? I'd be like, oh. You know, and, like, it's so funny because I did. I would fight with him, but then I would take the direction. And the first direction I remember him giving me was in this restaurant. He said to me, I said, my sister won't even look at me. She won't talk to me. Like, I'm just so obnoxious and unbearable to be around. And he said, I want you to go to work and keep your big fat mouth shut and do the dishes. I go, that's your direction? Keep my big fat mouth shut and do the dishes? My friend's like, that's the best spiritual direction I ever heard in my whole life. And the truth is, I did. And I did them through gritted teeth. I did these dishes. And I was thinking and thinking and thinking. And I was plotting their death. And I was insane, sober, you know. And then I, a couple months later, he said, how's it going? I said, I had lunch with my sister today. See, like, I want big stuff. I want a transformation right now. Like, and it was just these little things that I had to do, that I continue to do every day consistently, and being useful to God. My prayers got real small after that. They were no longer, God's a Santa Claus and I'm going to ask him for all this stuff. They were just like, God, please help me be useful today. Show me what you want me to do today. And thing, like, it's, that's what happened. It changed. And my head got a little more quiet. Or maybe it was still loud. I just didn't listen to it anymore. And I had an amazing experience. And about 5 years ago, again, I'm back in that spot where I'm starting to flatline in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't know what's wrong with me. And I'm, you know, taking on more sponsees. That's not working. Now I want to sleep all day. I don't know what's the matter with me. I just can't take another minute of it. And this is alcoholism. What was brought to my attention through Sarah's help was that I started to see that I was picking and choosing what I wanted to do in AA. Like, I never 10-step. And not because I didn't want to or didn't think I needed to. It's just that, like, I guess I just never thought it was something that you were supposed to really do. I was telling people to do it, but I didn't think you really actually had to do it. No meditation. When I was meeting with that nun, she taught me how to meditate, right? But, like, it was spotty. I'd do it here and there. You know what I mean? Like, when I felt really good, I'd say, oh, yeah, YouTube meditation sounds really nice right now. You know what I mean? Like, it's so ridiculous. And not until I'm so riddled with alcoholism and I can't take another second of my mind torturing me, am I actually willing to do something different here. And like I said, if you're new, I'm probably not giving you any hope, but this is alcoholism. I mean, this is what I suffer from, and that I really wasn't treating it. I was picking and choosing what I wanted to do in AA, and I would say to God, I have a home group. I go to that meeting every week. I sponsor people. I make the coffee. Like, I'm yelling at God, like, why aren't I feeling better? Why aren't you helping me get better here? Because if I'm going to do all this stuff, like, we got a deal here. I mean, I never actually signed a contract with him, but in my mind, we had a deal. Like, if I'm going to do all this stuff in AA, then you're going to get me better, God, right? And, I don't know if you ever answered that one, but anyhow, that was just like something that I had in my head, that's what happens, because I watch people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and some people go through the steps one time, and they're good to go, and they're living in 10, 11, and 12, and they have sponsees, and their life is great, and they're happy, and they're free, and all their outside stuff looks really good, and I'm like, But that's not my experience. My experience is if I am not treating my alcoholism every single day, I start to unravel. That's what happens to me. I can no longer like be helpful or useful. And because I can't get out of myself, because all I can think about is myself. And like I thought at 30 years sober, I would be like levitating or something by now. It's not happening. Not in Fishtown anyhow, but that'd be pretty funny. But what I do know is that AA is my solution. And that I can't live without Alcoholics Anonymous. And that it is the answer to everything. Everything. And that if I continue to seek God and seek help and be willing to be sponsored, like Sarah talks to me about that, like, you know, it's not just me sponsoring people, because I was using that for a while in AA. I'm helping people. Oh my God, how many more people I got to help to get better? You know, like it just wasn't scratching that itch. It just wasn't working for me. But that she reminds me that I need to be sponsored. And I need to work these steps. I can't just pick and choose. That 10, 11, and 12, that she's like, you have two inventories a day. Why do you think the book has that? Because we need that. If you're a real alcoholic. And like, you know, I guess the beauty is that I'm still open to have a new experience. And I don't care how much time someone has. I'll take help. You got a day and you can help me. Like, that's the funny part is, like, I don't have an ego with that anymore. I don't even know if I ever did. I just think I heard people in AA say your sponsor has to have more time than you. Who cares? I just know that, like, you can tell when someone's armed with the facts and they've had a vital spiritual experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. You can see it. They're free. They're happy. They're not faking it. You know what I mean? They don't have to pretend. Like, I felt like I was pretending in AA for so long. I'd get done speaking. I'd be like, you're such a liar. I don't really. Like, you know, that's not really. It's just so nuts. And so then for 3 days, I'd be like, I should have said this. Why did I say that? You know, and the truth is, I don't even know if anyone's listening. Everybody's sitting there thinking about themselves anyhow. But, like, if you're an alcoholic, you are. You know, why did I wear these socks? I should have wore different socks. Like, just, you know, anything that'll take us out of the present moment, and I'll get attached to. And then I'll be thinking, man, I really need to do some wash. And, like, the speaker's amazing, but I've checked out 10 minutes ago. And then everybody starts laughing. I'm like, what did he say? What did he say? Like, I got to come back. God, it's brutal being an alcoholic. I don't know if you got a head like me, but, man. It's like, and it just follows me around. I remember Chris Brennan saying to me one time, it's like fear picks us up in the morning. And it's like, we get in that car, and it just drives us around all day. You know what I mean? It's like in and out of traffic, get more scared. And it's like, and we just let fear just drive us around, drive us around, drive us around. And I go, well, how often are you supposed to talk to God? He's like, all day, every day. He's like, you can take a cigarette break, but that's it. I was like, man, this is really excessive here. And that honesty thing, I mean, come on. I remember I was a couple years sober, and my sponsor said, what the hell are you doing? We were at Wawa, and I was shoving Sweet and Lows in my pocketbook. And she was like, what are you doing? I said, they're expensive, and I need them. She was like, that's stealing. I was like, oh, man, you guys are ridiculous. So last week, I called Sarah. I said, I told a lie today, and I just stole. And she was like, okay. And I said, but I didn't even realize that I stole because I work for my family, right? It's my family's restaurant now I work for. And I got home and I took out all these Sweet and Lows and stuff and was putting them in my jar in my kitchen. She was like, Claire, return them. Then I was thinking, I don't want to take them back. It's my family's restaurant. Like, can't I just tell them I took a couple Sweet and Lows? She's like, no, return them. And the other night I took them back. I returned them. But this is me at 30 years sober. Like if I am not really like working this, it's like that slippery slope. But I start like, that's no big deal. It starts to chip away at you and chip away at you and chip away at you. And, like, before you know it, this is why people drink. That's why you're sitting in Alcoholics Anonymous and you hear the guy with 27 years picked up a drink. You're like, how did that happen? That's what happened. every time I heard that, people would say, I quit praying first. Stop praying. And I think I always prayed, but my head got louder than my prayers. And I don't want that to happen. And, you know, I guess the beauty is that I have someone to now, like, explain it to me and remind me that the main problem for me centers in my mind. That's the main problem. That's what the book says. That's where our problem is. And I never really fully understood that till recently. And I love AA. I love it. And my head will say, I'm not going to the meeting tonight. I don't feel like going. I'm not going to my home group. I'm sick of everyone there. Like, that's alcoholism. Holy crap. You know, and in spite of what my head says, I got to go anyhow. And I show up to AA and, you know, in spite of, like, the judgments I have, which are just nonstop, I go anyhow. And I ask God to help me be useful there. Don't listen to my head. Shut my head up and help me be useful there. And that's what I try to do. I'm so happy I'm sober. I really am. And I'm so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. And there's hope here. So if you're new, get some help, because there's help here and there's hope here. And I just want to say welcome home. That's all I got.
All right, and the group would like to thank Claire for sharing.